Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Woodstock, 3 days of peace and music, and mud and traffic jams. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. 40 years after Woodstock, concertgoers still go to extremes. And today, we're asking you, what's the craziest thing you've done for music? Later on the show, the Brazilian singer-songwriter Otto takes countryside rhythms of his native land and adds electronica and even a bit of Franz Kafka to the mix. We'll hear how it sounds when Otto and band perform live in our studio. But to begin, if you attended Woodstock in August of 1969, well, I tip my hat to you. You probably had to take a long road trip, battle the mud and rain, dodge the brown acid, and you still had to endure Sha-na-na before you got to see Jimi Hendrix. This mother of outdoor festivals proved that fans would endure a lot in order to be close to their favorite musicians and to be part of music history. So we want to hear about the crazy things that you've done for music in a moment. But first I'm joined by Catherine Sloss Hartman, who just finished a marathon mission called 50 Shows in 50 Days for Free. That's crazy. Catherine, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you.
So why did you do this?
Well, I came into the summer as an intern for a website called superglued.com, which is basically a place where people can go and share their concert experiences, tell their stories, and post photos and things like that.
Whether you were at Woodstock 40 years ago or at Ted Leo last month.
Yep, any concert ever, essentially, is what it is. We want to hear about it. So I came in as a regular intern, sort of doing, you know, online stuff for them, and then they presented me with this project. Which was going to 50 free shows in 50 days, and I decided it was something that I really wanted to do because I love live music, so it just sounded like an opportunity I couldn't miss.
It sounds crazy to me.
It was.
They must have sat around and said, all right, who's crazy? Let's get the intern. She'll do it.
Probably.
At any point during the 50 days, did you think, oh my God, what have I got? I just want to sleep tonight.
Oh, well, the last part, yeah. I definitely didn't get enough sleep as I should have, but I never regretted it. It was a great experience.
So you're studying sociology at Bryn Mawr College.
I am.
Did you learn anything about the concert-going creature in your 50 days?
Well, I learned that it takes a certain kind of person to endure 50 days of live music. And it's also just really interesting to see. I mean, I was definitely the people watcher of the group. And it was really great for me to see the different kinds of people that came out to different kinds of shows and what venues invited families or what, you know, sort of shows went on at 21 plus venues or things like that. It was just really interesting.
Now, it was you and your friend Nick.
Yep.
And you went to nothing but free shows.
Yep, only did free shows.
Which makes sense from a financial standpoint. Yep. Was that the only reason to choose free shows?
That was a big reason for it. I think we also wanted to sort of celebrate New York and what New York has to offer. And we wanted to do it in a cost-effective way.
Right.
So that was our option.
Okay, so you spent 50 nights, some days, mostly nights, seeing 50 different shows. All of them for free, which in itself, as I say, is kind of a crazy thing. What's the craziest thing you saw during the 50 concerts?
The craziest thing I saw, it's not so much crazy as it was just really, really interesting and fun for me. I saw a band called Care Bears on Fire, and they were 13 and 14-year-old girls.
And they've been playing for a while.
They've been playing
They're
for a
vets.
Really long time. They had just gotten back from Lollapalooza, and it was just really great to see them so young and just really doing it, living their dream. So that was crazy.
And Brooklyn figures prominently in your 50 nights of free music.
Yeah, there was a lot of Brooklyn going on.
Not surprisingly. Catherine Sloss Hartman saw a number of things at the Prospect Park Bandshell, including the Nigerian bandleader Femi Kuti.
By night, we work and pray for
Femi Kuti. He and his band were playing at the Prospect Park Bandshell as part of Celebrate Brooklyn. It was the first night of 50 consecutive nights in which Catherine Sloss Hartman and her friend Nick Haycock went to 50 different free shows, 50 shows in 50 days. Much later in the 50 days, Pat Benatar with Blondie and the Donnas at Coney Island. All right, so from Femi Kuti to Pat Benatar, Catherine, you obviously saw a lot of different things,
yep.
Some which will have stayed with you, and others over the course of 50 days, I'm sure, were forgotten even before the 50 days were gone. Any regrets?
I have not getting as much sleep as I should have.
Okay.
That's my only regret.
We're talking about today the extremes that people will go for music, to see an artist, to buy a record, I guess, to get a download. I don't know what you have to do to get a download that would be extreme or crazy, but we want to know what you've done. What's the craziest thing you've done for music? You can call us at 212-433-WNYC or leave a comment on the soundcheck page at WNYC.org. And joining us in the studio is Ian Daly, senior writer at Details Magazine. Ian, what's the craziest thing you've done for music?
You know, I managed to keep my shirt on for all the shows, most of them.
Now you're just back from Sasquatch.
I'm just back from Sasquatch. Not too crazy. It was out in the Columbia River Gorge in rural Washington. So it's 3 days.
And one person's definition of not too crazy will not always...
I like to think I set the bar a little higher for that, yeah. I suppose the craziest thing I ever did is I actually flew to London from L.A. just to go see Bjork play at the Royal Opera House. This was back in 2001. We stayed up all night to get tickets via telephone, and then we literally just flew there for the one show, and it was completely worth it.
Wow. Now, at the Sasquatch Festival, which is an outdoor event,
yeah.
How do you shower?
That's where it gets a little tricky.
See, this is where I'm not buying the not-so-crazy
right.
part.
Baby wipes. Bring baby wipes. It was actually, they had showers, but they had, I think, vastly underestimated the number of dirty people that would be camping with them. So we actually had to crash our friends who were staying in the VIP section by stealing their bracelets, and they snuck us in. And I still waited 3 hours for one shower, and it was the only shower I took the whole time I was there.
How long were you there?
3 days.
Wow. So that's, you know, I mean, we hear lots of stories, and you don't have to be out camping, you know, but there are stories about...
Yeah, you kind of do, though, you know. At those festivals, I feel like you gotta go all the way.
No, but in terms of crazy things people have done, even when you're not dealing with the great outdoors and porta-potties and all that kind
right.
of stuff, you know, I mean, you've heard stories of, you know, backstage bribery to get into a concert and, you know,
right.
scalping tickets and stuff.
Sure.
I mean... What are some of the classic stories?
You know, that's all run-of-the-mill. Actually, my dad, who's a photographer, back in the day was covering Kiss. And I remember he was telling me he went to work his way up to the front of the stage and had to, you know, edge past everybody. It was one of those concerts where they didn't have a specific area for the photographers. And he gets up there and he's looking for a break where he can actually sort of get some good shots, right? And finally, after edging his way up there, he sees a circle open up in the front of the crowd. And he's like, this is my moment. Great, I can finally get up by the stage. And he looks and he sees why the circle opened up. And it's because a guy is completely out of his mind peeing in a circle right in the front of the stage. So, yeah, all sorts of crazy things have happened. I imagine that's the least of it at a Kiss concert.
All right. Now, did anything crazy happen at the Sasquatch Festival? Is there a story that might actually,
There are several, yeah. One interesting thing happened. This was actually a really epic moment. The Decemberists did their entire recent album, Hazards of Love. It was a concept album, so it's really continual from start to finish. It's a really great album. And right, you know, in the middle of the show, as they're climaxing, there's this incredible song, The Wanting Comes in Waves, and the music has just reached this crazy, crazy moment. And I notice, you know, despite that, most of the crowd is looking off to the left instead of at the stage. I'm like, well, that's funny. Why are they not paying attention to Colin Molloy singing his heart out? And then I find out why. And high up on an escarpment, way up to the left, in plain view of the thousands and thousands of people below them, as the sun is setting over the glittering water of the Columbia River Gorge, two people are just going at it. And just, you know, in full view.
So a little X-rated show for a supposedly G-rated concert.
A little X-rated show. And it was a beautiful, epic moment. That's what a concert should be.
That's the Decemberists and the I'll use the word climax advisedly here, of their album, The Hazards of Love. And, it was kind of a literal climax for a couple at the Sasquatch Festival, as Ian Daly of Details Magazine was telling us, in full view of the rest of the concertgoers. We're asking on the show today, what is the craziest thing you've done for music, to go see a concert or to pick up a new record? And let's check in with some of our Soundcheck listeners. Alex joining us from Park Slope in Brooklyn. Hi, Alex.
Hey there. I'm calling to talk about the Coventry Festival, Fish's final festival. They're back now touring, but at the time didn't know when they were going to come back, and it was in Coventry, Vermont. It rained the night before the festival was supposed to start, so coming up to the festival, we were in over 24 hours of traffic, so we slept in our car that night, just parked on the road, kind of walked around, people selling grilled cheeses. The lot just kind of opened up right on the road. And as they were pulling cars in to park, they were all sinking down into the mud because of the rain. And that's just caused all this traffic. And the next day, the bass player of Fish, Mike Gordon, he got on the radio. Everyone's listening to the same radio station and basically tells everyone to turn around, go home, there'll be another show. And no one did. Everyone parked their cars on the side of the road. What cops were telling us not to do that, and we kind of just said that we had to. And I know my friend and I walked about 12 miles, and we got picked up by some guys in their not four-wheeler, but one of those things, and they took us for four of the miles. So.
Did you eventually get to the concert?
We eventually got to the concert. If they didn't have. They had like a little massage booth there. If they didn't have a massage booth, I would not have made it through the 3 days because just, you know, carrying bottles of water and your food and your tent and all that stuff, it's not easy to walk with. And then you're in the mud the whole time, so that's not the easiest thing to dance in. I also got hit in the head with a tambourine that night. And then on the way home, I actually got in a car accident. My friend fell asleep and we got into a car accident, and it was a really intense weekend, but ultimately worth it, even though Fish is back, and it was it wasn't the best show ever, let's just say. There was a lot of crying, a lot of sputtered songs, some forgotten lyrics here and there, but, you know, it was emotional, and it was a good time.
And you got a great story out of it, and apparently a massage. So well done, Alex. Let's hear what Haya here in New York has to add to the conversation. Haya, what's the craziest thing you've done for music?
Well, it wasn't quite as crazy as that last story. That seems like pretty intense. But
yeah, it's a tough act to follow.
Yes, it is. For the past 2 weeks, there's been a tour going around called the Big Surprise Tour, which was Old Crow Medicine Show, The Felice Brothers, The Dave Rawlings Machine with Gillian Welch, and Justin Townes Earle. And me and my mother and my sister went to five of these shows in a row. We went in New York, we went in Philadelphia, then we flew out to Louisville, Kentucky, and then took from Louisville, Kentucky, the Greyhound bus to Nashville, saw the show in Nashville, flew back home, then drove down to Maryland on Sunday. They were doing Route 29 review, which was Old Crow Medicine Show and the Felice Brothers and a bunch of other bands, including Levon Helm. So the four first shows were basically the same show, but we flew all around to see them, me and my mom and my sister. We love the Felice Brothers. I think we've been to now 20 of their concerts in just starting from January.
So basically you followed the show for at least the first four of those five concerts.
Yes, we followed them around.
So almost like, you know,
Fish or Grateful Dead fans do, or did. First of all, it must have cost you a fortune. And if it was going to be the same show four times in a row, is it that good that it's worth all the airfare and the time spent traveling and stuff?
Well, actually, I'm a college student. I actually go to Bryn Mawr, just like Catherine does.
Wow.
Which is why I started listening to the show. My mother called me up and said, put this on.
But, crazy Bryn Mawr girl.
My mother, who is amazing and loves this music, pays for me and my sister to go around. So I don't know how much it costs. I'm sure it costs a lot.
Wow.
But it was definitely worth it. I mean, Dave Rawlings is the most amazing musician I've ever seen.
He is quite. And Justin Towns Earl is no slouch either. So.
Oh, yes. Justin Towns Earl was. I'd never really listened to his music before, but this tour just made me fall in love with him.
All right.
And even though it was the same band, they did play different stuff. So it was different music, but the same setup.
Thanks, Haya. Thanks for the call. So, Catherine, what are they putting in the water there in Bryn Mawr?
I don't know.
It's kind of crazy. I mean, at least you, with your 50 shows in 50 days, didn't have to leave the environs of the city, right? Everything was in the five boroughs?
I didn't have to, but I would have.
All right, let's see what some of our Soundcheck listeners are leaving on the Soundcheck page at our website, WNYC.org. We'll check in with producer Joel Meyer in the control room. Joel?
Well, John, we heard from a Fish fan a little bit earlier. A listener named Ron shares a link to the New York Times wedding announcement section in which a Fish fan left for a Fish concert in Denver 3 days before his wedding. Now, the fact that it did make it into the wedding announcements means that eventually the couple reunited in time for the wedding. Also, John Paul from Elizabeth, New Jersey writes, can I report my fiance? She followed the Smashing Pumpkins during their farewell tours and was unable to rent a car since she was too young at the time. However, she was old enough to rent U-Haul trucks, ... Frank in Bergen County writes, I once quit a job 3 days into my employment to go see a Radiohead show. Boss wouldn't give me time off. It's important to have priorities in life.
Wow. Okay, so those are some of the crazy things that some of our Soundcheck listeners have done for music. What about you? You can join us online, leave a comment at the Soundcheck page, WNYC.org, or you can call us at 212-433-WNYC. That's 433-9692. I'm here with Ian Daly, the senior writer at Details Magazine, and also with Catherine Sloss-Hartman, who did 50 shows in 50 days for free at the behest of the music website Superglued. Catherine, what was the most memorable of the 50?
For me, the most memorable was a show in Prospect Park Bandshell. It was Dean and Britta, and they played a commissioned piece called The 13 Most Beautiful Songs for Andy Warhol's Screen Test. And basically what they did was they played 11 original pieces and two covers, played in front of videos of Andy Warhol's Screen Test.
And, of course, Dean and Britta, you know, have been around for a long time. This was this towards the end of your 50 days?
This was actually, I think it was right around show 30 or something. It was, yeah.
It was Dean and Britta, and this is their version of Singer Sing. In a moment, we continue our discussion of the crazy things fans will do for music. We'll ask who are the artists who inspire fans to travel far and wide for music. And then coming up later, percussionist and singer Otto hails from Brazil, but don't expect your traditional menu of samba and bossa nova. He'll show us why when he and his large band play live here in our studio. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. More now in our look at the extremes that fans will go to just for music, just to see a concert. We want to hear from you. What's the craziest thing you've done to see live music? Our number is 212-433-WNYC, or leave a comment at WNYC.org. And again, joining me in the studio, Catherine Schloss Hartman, who is half of a duo that just completed a challenge to see 50 free concerts in 50 days this summer, a challenge issued by the website Superglued, and Details Magazine senior writer Ian Daly, whose quest to see this artist, Prince, during his Purple Rain heyday, led to nothing. Is that right?
Yeah, it was a dead end. I was really angry about it, actually. I was trying to convince my mother that it would be totally cool to go see the show. I was growing up in Naples, which is in Southwest Florida, and the show was in Miami, across the state, and I was, you know, she just wouldn't let me go, which infuriated me. I mean, my bedroom was covered in Purple Rain posters. I mean, by far, this guy's my favorite artist. I would listen to his albums nonstop. I wore out needles. What was her excuse? You know, I think it's a pretty lame one, but she claims it's because I was 8 years old. To this day, it just doesn't cut any ice with me.
How did you intend to get to this concert at the age of eight?
I think that was something that I had convinced her that I would find a way. I didn't need her, you know?
Catherine, Prince is still inspiring, you know, this kind of fervor in people. Part of your 50 concerts in 50 days was the Big Prince sing-along.
Yep, we went to the Purple Rain sing-along at Prospect Park Bandshell.
And what was that like?
It was so much fun. It was one of the most fun nights of the summer. Everyone was dancing and singing, and it was a sight to see.
All right, so let's hear from some more of our Soundcheck listeners. Concert Joe is joining us from Bay Ridge. Why do they call you Concert Joe, Joe?
Hello?
Hi.
Yes, the reason they called me Concert Joe is back in 1992, I set a world concert record of 1,031 concerts in 1 year, not counting opening acts. And all of the shows I caught, maybe, I'd say at least three quarters of all the shows. I've seen over 15,000 concerts, been on MTV, VH1, the New York Times a couple of times, the New York Post.
All right, Concert Joe, I have to tell you that when you said 1,300 concerts in 1 year,
no,
Catherine's mouth hit her. So what is that, about three a day?
Yeah, on a slow day. What I used to do, you know, Manhattan, you see, New York is the live concert capital of the world. If you lived in Oshkosh or something, you couldn't do it. But I used to see three concerts a day and five on the weekend. And if I would have had more money, lived in Manhattan and a car, I could have seen 2,000 concerts that year.
Could you have done this if you had a job at the time?
Yes, well, I did have a job, but not that 1 year. I was unemployed. But otherwise, I've seen over 500 shows a year for the last 20 years with a job. This was my schedule. I would get up at 6:30 in the morning, go to work on a construction site for 12 hours, go to college for 3 hours, go to 3-4 concerts a night, get home, get 3 hours of sleep, and do it again. And I did that for 20 years.
Wow.
15,000 shows.
And now you're making time to listen to Soundcheck. That's really great. All right, now, out of all those concerts, I mean, this is crazy enough, Joe, but I'm going to ask the question anyway. What is the craziest single thing that you did to get to one of those concerts?
I would say, I flew one time. I went out to Arizona to see the Grateful Dead, and it was an afternoon show, and Lincoln Center was having the 150th anniversary. So I saw the Grateful Dead, hopped onto a cab, went to the airport, made it back to New York, and caught the 150th anniversary of Lincoln Center and the Grateful Dead in one day.
Wow. Do you know what?
I snuck into the Who show about 3 years ago at that bank, what's it called, Gotham Hall, dressed as a cook to see the Who when they played there about 3 years ago.
That's pretty crazy. I also like the idea of Lincoln Center being 150 years old. It's not quite, but there must have been some other anniversary going on that night. Anna joining us on the line in Brooklyn. Anna, once again, you have a tough act to follow there, but what's the craziest thing you've done for music?
Well, I'm 19 now, and when I was 16, I mean, I'm still an avid Stones fan, which is a little odd for nowadays, I guess. But I love them so much. I mean, I listen to them all the time. I discovered them in like seventh grade, and I sent Oprah over like 50 letters because I had watched this one show once where she had some fans of the Jonas Brothers on, and I particularly think that they're not the best group. But so I was like, well, she doesn't have the Jonas Brothers on. I mean, most of her audience are middle-aged women. They have to know who the Stones are. So I was trying to get her to get me to meet them on her show, but that didn't really work out. I sent like a video. I heard that they were playing at the Beacon Theater, and I was living in Manhattan at the time, actually, and I was like, screw it, I'm just gonna go and camp out and wait for them outside. So I got my friend, who's actually a Beatles fan, to camp outside with me in November, or in October, I guess, in like the freezing cold. We camped outside all night. My dad brought the van.
That's a good friend. That's a good friend, Anna.
Yeah. And in the morning, my friend left, and I had 2 hours of sleep. I was freezing. I hadn't eaten anything. I just had like 3 cups of coffee, and so I was waiting around the side entrance and just started dancing and singing, waiting for them to come out. And the people in the theater finally pushed me back, and the Stones actually pulled up in limos, and it took them about 5 seconds to say hi, but they went in. But I got to see them, and it was really awesome. And I don't know, it was cool following, you know, my groupie sisters from the 60s and stuff. So.
And you were 16 at the time.
I was.
All right. Anna, a great story. Thanks very much. Let's check in with Joel Meyer, our soundcheck producer in the control room, with some more of the comments coming in online. Joel?
There are plenty of great stories on the soundcheck page at WNYC.org. Jean from Brooklyn tells us that she stood in line for 23 straight hours to get a standing room ticket to see the Metropolitan Opera Gala celebrating James Levine's 25th anniversary. Jennifer from Manhattan tried to talk her way into a Death Cab for Cutie show in Australia by saying that she was a representative of Virgin Records. She was denied, but people took pity on her and gave her a ticket and backstage access. Jeremy in Brooklyn writes this: once in Dublin, after drinking many Guinness, I decided to sneak into the Lou Reed show. I climbed up the fire escape and found a door and entered to find myself above the rafters, and I could see the stage way below. However, I was kicked out by security, only to walk around to the front of the venue and find out that it was a free show.
Nicely done. Ian, several people have mentioned Grateful Dead, Fish. I mean, you know, there is a kind of a part of the music community where it goes beyond the music to the community, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's an interesting point, I think, in which you cross a line where it ceases to become music and it becomes a way of life. You know, even right down to Parrotheads with Jimmy Buffett, or we were talking about the Insane Clown Posse and the Juggalos. It definitely crosses a line.
And at that point, the whole thing could be seen by outsiders as crazy.
As a little insane, the same way Trekkies might be construed to the outside world, yeah.
And Catherine, as a student of sociology, you know, I mean, that's got to be part of what you're kind of interested in, is what seems normal inside the group seems abnormal outside of it.
Yeah, a little bit. It's a lot of what I'm interested in, and also a lot of what brings people together as a community, so...
And your 50 concerts in 50 days included this band, Ted Leo and the Pharmacists. Yep. Was this towards the end?
It was right around in the middle, yeah.
Okay. Good that you can remember something from the middle of those 50 days. We've been speaking with Catherine Sloss-Hartman, who saw 50 shows in 50 days for free at the challenge at the behest of the website Superglued, and with Ian Daly, who's senior writer at Details Magazine. Catherine, Ian, thank you both for being with us.
Thanks a lot for having me.
And still to come, Otto is a singer-songwriter whose music can truly be called Kafkaesque. More surprisingly, it comes by way of Brazil. He'll play live. Tomorrow on the show, a conversation with the garrulous neo-soul singer Adele on Soundcheck. It's been all messed up since the very beginning. You act so tough. People think that you're winning. And everyone wants something from Colleen. Colleen, perpetual.